Okay, we're going to jump into the next meeting, which says we absolutely insist on enjoying life and the convention. So before we kick it off to the next meeting, just a reminder, if people could switch off all their cell phones or put them on mute. No refreshments are allowed back into the venue. And then a last reminder, the German speaking meeting, the Germans got it wrong. And for those of you who weren't at the last meeting, Uganda invited us to the East African Convention in Uganda, Kampala, November the 17th to the 19th. So start saving some money, putting money aside, and I look at the latecomers. Look at them. You alcoholics are an undisciplined bunch. And I know your name, Candace Clarence Wendy. I will call you Dieter. Sit down. Sit down, Dieter. Thank you. Now I've forgotten what I was saying. Yes, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. So I used to love it when people used to say that what? Pain in life is necessary. Suffering is a choice. Now we get to choose to live a life that's happy, joyous, and free. And the next panel will be sharing with us on enjoying life on life's terms. Or even better still, life on God's terms. So I'm going to hand over to Hannes, who will be chairing the next meeting. Enjoy. And give him some love. Stop being so serious. Thank you.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much, Sandisa. My name is Hannes. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is the 28th of June, 2022. And my home group is Vera Park, although I'd like to think that I can call many groups around Pretoria home. My sponsor is Yaku Al, and it is really a privilege and an honor for me to be able to chair this meeting. I would like to call on Yaku to please read chapter 3 for us.
Good morning, guys. My name is Yaku, I'm an alcoholic. Chapter 3, more about alcoholism. Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No person likes to think he is bodily and mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts to prove we could drink like other people. The idea that somehow, someday, he will control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it into the gates of insanity or death. We learned that we had to fully concede to our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or presently may be, has to be smashed. We alcoholics are men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking. We know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals, usually brief, were inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. We are convinced to a man that alcoholics of our type are in the grip of a progressive illness. Over any considerable period, we get worse, never better. We are like men who have lost their legs. They never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment which will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by a still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there is no such thing as making a normal drinker out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but it hasn't done so yet. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exceptions to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone who is showing inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. Here are some of the methods we have tried. Drinking beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines, agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job, taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing off forever with and without a solemn oath, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to asylums, and we could increase to this list ad infinitum. Thank you for allowing me to be of service.
Thank you, Yaku. I would now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is the desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy. Neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So, dear fellows, as you can see, our theme and topic for this meeting is we absolutely insist on enjoying life. And seen in isolation, the sentence, we absolutely insist on enjoying life, reminds me a little bit of my Wim Gert one Christmas saying to my cousin, you will stop fighting and you will enjoy yourself. But in some capacity, I suppose it does mirror some of our alcoholic existences. The specific phrase comes from page 132 in the Big Book, in the chapter, The Family Afterward, and is followed by, we absolutely insist on enjoying life, we try not to indulge in cynicism over the state of the nation, nor do we carry the world's troubles on our shoulders. When we see a man sinking into the mire that is alcoholism, we give him first aid and place what we have at his disposal. I suppose for many of us, and certainly for myself, I've seen enough tragedy thanks to my drinking that I almost am left with no choice but to enjoy life. The rest of that particular paragraph also continues and essentially says what we frequently hear at meetings. We do not wish to regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it. Walking through the convention yesterday, I certainly felt very pleased hearing a lot of laughter and seeing a lot of smiles, and often passing people where I can hear they are busy telling war stories, some of them no doubt with terrible consequences, but the capacity to actually enjoy those stories in retrospect amazed me. Having said that, that's not the thing I most frequently heard yesterday during the day. That would have been, oh my goodness, you look so much taller on Zoom. I would now like to introduce our speakers sitting closest to me. We've got Craig G. from Spirit. Next to him, Moeng S. from Seapoint Sunset. Heidi K. from Valeria, and Law K. from Soweto. Our speakers will have a maximum of 20 minutes each, and I'll be eagle-eyed to ensure that they stick to their time. So, without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Craig G.
Hi everybody, my name is Craig and I'm an alcoholic. Let me start this timer here. Thank you for asking me to share, Frank. So far it's been a great convention. Even at where I'm staying, it's so fun there. We're definitely not a glam lot. When I got this topic, I was thinking about what really, I haven't prepared, by the way. I just thought about it a bit, and then, I didn't even write anything down or anything. I just brought this book here because somehow I carry this with me everywhere I go, and I'm okay, you know. So how do I, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. So when I came in, I was 24 years old.
I'm a poor one.
I had no job. My family wanted nothing to do with me. I had no qualifications. I had no sense of direction. I had really nothing going for me. You know, I was just drinking, you know, and that was the only enjoyment I had in my life. I thought that's as good as it gets, you know, but I kept making life worse for everybody else around me, you know, and I wasn't enjoying it when I was sober. And by God's grace, while looking for a job, I asked the lady to help me find a job, and she ended up putting me into rehab. It's like the craziest part of my story is that, you know, I was genuinely looking for a job because money was going to make me happy, and this lady's like, no, I think you need to go to a rehab, you know. And I was like, I was in this weird position where I was willing to do anything for my life to change, you know. And I went to this rehab. She didn't tell me I was going to have to stop drinking or anything like that. She just said, these people will help you, Craig, you know. And I went there on that, you know, and must have been there a couple of days, and after a detox, and I was exposed to everything in a sober mind while being sober, all the damage I had done to myself and the people around me, you know, and I realized, like, yo, that's been way worse than I thought it was, you know. And I thought I was a really bad person, you know. And they also told me that I shouldn't really be drinking, you know. And I thought, like, whoa, like, that's, you know, like, how am I going to have fun, you know? Regardless of the fact that my mother had left me and wanted nothing to do with me, so did my sister, my father, you know, I'd gotten violent there at home every day. It was an everyday thing. I had nothing else going for me, but the one thing I was worried about was how was I going to have fun, you know? And that's like, a lot of sponsees are like that, like, you know, so funny to think that, because that's what alcohol was, my only sense of enjoyment, you know, only thing I knew that made me happy. Anyway, so not too long after that, so three guys from AA came into my rehab, you know, three guys were still in my life today, and I kind of knew I can't go back to living the way I was living, but I thought, like, I'm going to be extremely miserable. But I was prepared to be miserable because I thought I had done a lot of bad things that should have ended me up in jail or other places, you know. And these guys were extremely happy to be sober, you know. They came in there, I'll never forget this day, you know. They came in there, they were laughing, they were joking, and they were like 15, 20 years sober, you know. And they came in there to share, and then all of them spoke, and I just loved it. They were talking about rugby. I played rugby back in the day. I just was drawn to these guys, you know. The one guy said he would help me. Turns out this guy lived right out, like, around the corner from my house, you know. It was like, and he said, like, when I leave there, you'll come fetch me and take me to meetings, you know. And he came to see me while I was there. I didn't know this man from a bar of soap, and he just came and he did all that for me, you know. Every week he'd walk in there, he'd talk to everybody, he was so happy, you know. He'd hug everybody, he'd shake their hands, and everybody was happy to see my sponsor come in there, you know. And I love this man, and I still love him. And yeah, so when I left there, the weirdest thing, you know, all the stuff that I didn't have, you know, the money, the job, the degree, and all these things. I still remember the first time he fetched me for a meeting. I told him, like, now I'm going to go get a job with my uncle. I'm going to start studying. And he just said, like, Greg, don't worry about that stuff now, man. You know, like, just go to meetings. Just go to meetings. And I was like, oh, for the first time in my life, somebody told me not to worry about stuff that worried me every single day of my life, you know. I was like, yo, this doesn't make sense, but I'm going to follow this guy. I can blame him if it doesn't work out, you know. And anyway, I went to these meetings with him and all of his friends, you know, and everywhere they went, they knew everybody, they shook hands, they were either sharing there, they knew people knew them, you know. It was like, I just, like, yo, I was in awe of these people. They were so happy to be sober, and they were doing service, you know, and they took me with, you know, they really showed me what this fellowship was all about, and how, like, big it is, and I was a part of it, even though I didn't feel like I was, like, what I had done to deserve to get in there, I don't know. I was just like, yo, I can't believe these people want me to be with them all the time. They fetch me from my house. If he couldn't fetch me, there would be somebody there waiting for me, because he said, no, I can't make it this night. This guy's coming to fetch you, and they'd be there, and they'd take me to these meetings, and we go on rallies, you know. I don't think I left the country ever before I came into AA. Then I ended up going to a suitor with these guys, you know, a whole bunch of guys. I was like half their age, sometimes, yo, I don't know, a third of their age. But these people, I felt like I fitted right in there. They were the craziest people. I heard all their stories and how their lives had changed. And they said it all happened here, you know, and they made it fun for me, you know. And And I'm so grateful to all of them, you know, and they were consistent. They all still here. You know, none of them have relapsed. I still see them all the time. Some of them are here. You know, wherever I go to meetings or conventions or rallies, wherever they're there, you know, it's like this consistency in my life that, you know, I couldn't have put there myself, you know. And I love being around them, and it didn't matter the ages. They treated me just like, you know, equal. I didn't have to give them money, and, you know, I just, you know, the trips I had, the stories. I would literally just sit in the car and laugh all the time, you know. I just laugh the whole time. They say laughter is the thing. I love laughing, you know, and that's, you know, crazy old-timers fighting with each other, and that just made me laugh, you know. It was like, what, you know. I still remember, like, you know, my grandma was asking me, like, let me see your friends, you know. Let me, I said, like, I don't know, he won't care if I mention his name. He was like, I told my mom, like, you know, this is my friend Victor, you know, and I showed my mom a picture, and she was looking at me like, yo, this guy looks like he's older than me. I said, but mom, he's very funny, you know, he's very funny. And he's very wise, you know, and that's what those guys were to me. You know, my father always says he couldn't be a father to me, he couldn't give me what he wanted to, you know, but I somehow landed up in a place where I was surrounded by fathers, you know, like older brothers that I always longed for, you know, who showed me the way, you know, who told me, Craig, this is the place you need to be, you know. And thank God they did that, you know. And like I said, I went everywhere. I went to all the meetings, I went to all the rallies, conventions, and everything like that, you know. And I saw the miracles, and I was experiencing some of my own, and I wanted to be here, you know. And around about a year and a half down the line, you know, The fellowship alone was unfortunately not enough for me, you know. My girlfriend left me. That was the last straw, you know. After many fights and me doing many bad things, even though I was sober, my family wanted nothing to do with me. They were like, everything's still all about you. My sister wrote me a letter. She said, Craig, you're just sober. Everything's still all about you. You're still angry. You know, I'll be in every single meeting, because when I left that meeting, it was like the worst time for me, you know. But in the convention that spread out for the whole weekend, I wanted to be there, because somehow when I was close to these people, everything was okay, you know. But as soon as I left them and I went home, I was like, oh, back to restless, irritable, discontent, you know. And I was doing so much in AA, you know. And I thought, why is this happening to me, you know? Old timers are telling me, like, oh, it's so good, like, it's liquor to be sober, and I'm just like, yeah, like, no, man. But anyway, I say yes, because I want them to accept me or whatever, and I don't want them to think I'm struggling or anything like that. Until I couldn't, and this girl left me, and like that guy from Uganda said, it wasn't like a big rock bottom, it's just a normal breakup, you know, but for me, it was as if my life was over, you know, like, I can't explain to you the loneliness and the pain I was in, you know. I was driving home from a meeting when it happened, you know. It's crazy. And I came to the realization that, yet again, my plan failed, you know. I came into AA thinking that I just have to be sober, you know. And then everything else will fall into place, you know. I'll get the job, I'll get married, I'll get all those things that I thought, like, life is about, and that's what's going to give me fulfillment, you know. And that's what's going to make me happy, you know. Because that's what I saw in the outside of other people. I never saw, like, why these people were so happy, even though they didn't have that much, you know. I didn't want to acknowledge what they had to do to get there, you know. And I landed up in that place, you know, and that place was where I realized I'm sober, I don't know how to run my life. And when I was drinking, I couldn't do it either. It landed me in the exact same place, even worse, because I didn't have a drink to make me feel better. And somehow, another God's grace, you know, I end up at the coffee shop, and a man walks past, and I'm going to a meeting, and the guy I'm talking to now telling all my problems. Finally, that girl told me, tell the people how you really are, you know. And I told this guy, and that guy said he's going to a meeting, and I followed him to that meeting hesitantly. And then I asked him to sponsor me, and he said to me, we're going to work the steps, you know. And I was like, oh, anything but the steps, you know, like, isn't there like a rally I haven't been to, you know, isn't there like a meeting I haven't been to that I'll go to, that I'll take service at that meeting also, I'll carry all the chairs, I'll do all those things. And he was like, no, we're going to work the steps, man. You know, and I was in a place where I had no choice, you know, I was going to die. I felt like I wanted to die that day, you know, and it wasn't because that girl left me. I came to learn it was a big, much deeper problem than that, you know. That was the surface level of it. And yeah, I went through the steps with this guy, you know. And thank God I did, you know, because then my life really started, you know. I came to learn why I was really an alcoholic, you know, and it was purely because of the fact that when I started to drink, I couldn't stop, and when I wanted to really stop, you know, when I had all the reason to stop, you know, my mother had left, I'd hurt my mother, I'd carried my mother out of her room because I hurt her to the point like that, you know. My sister wanted nothing to do with me. My father was coming over the police. I had no job. I had no degree. I had all the reasons to take my life seriously, and I wanted to, you know, I wanted things to change. But I couldn't, you know, and you see, and that guy, he explained to me, that's why you're alcoholic. It's not about how much or how little you drink. It's purely that you tick those two boxes, you know. And you see, that the unmanageability, you know, wasn't because I was like unfit or I didn't have money or I didn't have a degree or I wasn't married or I didn't have money. I don't know if money one was a big one. I thought that's what unmanageability was all based on, but it wasn't. You see, it's the inside. It's that feeling you're feeling right now as you're talking to me, Greg. You're so fearful. You're so lonely, you know. Nothing seems to satisfy that feeling inside of you. You see, that's what the steps is about, you know. That's what you need to fix, you know. And I was like, you're... And you know, that day, you know, I never ever felt that lonely and that scared since that day I spoke to that man, you know. And then I started following the directions like as outlined in this book, you know. And all because I wanted that unmanageability to go away. You see, it doesn't matter, because I knew I had money in my life, that I had that unmanageability. I had no money, I had that unmanageability. I was fit, I had that unmanageability, and I was unfit. I had a girlfriend, and I didn't have a girlfriend. It didn't matter what was going on in my life. I had a family who loved me. It didn't matter, that was there. Somehow I was achieving as a child, I used to achieve, I was a sportsman, I was academic, I was like, ew, I still never felt good enough, I still never felt okay, you know. And he said, this is what this program is about, it's designed to fix that, you know, fix that and everything else will fall into place. And you know, he said, you have to come to believe in this higher power. And I didn't want anything to do with God or any church or anything like that, you know, I didn't understand church, I couldn't grasp it in my mind. Why other people who... I'm like achieving all of the stuff, but when I came to Sunday school, I had no clue what was going on. You know what I mean? Like, I was like, I should be good at all schools. Why am I not good here? You know, and I didn't like it, and it seemed boring, so I shut that completely out, you know. And he said, like, Craig, all you need is a willingness to believe that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. You know, just a willingness. And was I willing? Of course I was, because I had no other choice. I felt like I was going to die. He kept telling me that. Do you want to die, or do you want to do this, Craig? And I was like, oh, I think I'll... I don't want to die, so I don't want to do this, but okay, I'll do it anyway. And you know, and I made the decision to turn my will and my life over to that power, which I didn't know, I didn't understand. And he kept telling me, it doesn't matter about that stuff, Greg, just take the steps, man. You know, you don't have to be the best, you don't need to know, you have to speak the best, whatever, you know, just take the steps. Are you willing to do, you know? And I had turned things over in meetings so many times. I had been around in so many meetings, I knew the lingo, I could tell you, I was turning this over and turning, hanging that and turning that, and I'm like, yo. But I had no clue what I was saying, because it actually just meant I was willing to do the one thing I didn't ever want to do, you know, which was that step four that I had heard about, which was so scary and so sad, and I was like, no, I think I'll just go to 90 meetings for the rest of my life, you know, then do that. You know what I mean? That's what I was doing. I was like, yo, I was doing as much, more than anyone else, you know, and I thought it deprived me of having to do that, you know. And I thought it would be a confessional, and it wasn't. And he told me it's about uncovering the truth, you know, and sharing that truth with him, you know, sharing the way I really was, the selfish, self-centered bastard, you know, was dishonest and hurt people, you know, even when I didn't seem like I was, you know, I seemed all nice and stuff. It was just all about me, you know. And I did that, you know, and I felt so free afterwards, you know. I never forget, I couldn't understand how these things were working in my life, you know. And I did. And I came out there with a long list of character defects. He explained to me how there's no ways I'm going to get rid of these things by myself. I must not leave it to this power that I say I trust so much. You know, that I speak so highly of when I gave him my conception of God. Like, he's like, yeah, now come, leave it to that God and carry on with the rest of the steps, you know. Just keep taking the action, Craig, you know. And I went on to make amends to that girl that left me, to my sister, to my family, to the people I stole from, to the people that kicked me out of the first party I ever went to. And that was what happened at my first party. I got kicked out. And I got beaten up. You know, that's the first time I ever drank. And I had to go make amends to those people, you know. But I was willing to, because I didn't want to die. I wanted to live a happy, joyous and free life. And he told me, if I carry on taking these steps, that's what will happen for me, you know. That enjoyment was not based on anything outside of myself. It's all about in here, you know. I needed to connect with the power that was already in here. I just needed to unblock it, you know, by taking these steps. And when I made enough amends, and things started to clear the way, you know. And I was awoken to a whole new world. You know, I had tools to live in this world, and he said, your duty is to practice these tools and live in this world, but the spiritual world. You know, I didn't get the girl back. I didn't have more money when I finished the steps the first time. I didn't have a degree. I didn't have any of those things that I thought was going to bring me peace and enjoyment, you know. I had nothing. I had a spiritual awakening, you know, which for me as an alcoholic was the only thing I needed, was the only thing that was going to work for me, was the only thing that was going to make this world, like me cope in this world, you know. And it's crazy, you know, it was always, I just needed to connect to that power, you know, and these simple steps was going to allow me to do that. And then he said, okay, now you have to practice it for the rest of your life, you know, or you die. But that's the truth. Powerlessness will kill you. You know what I mean? It will kill you if you think you have power. You know, I had no more choices. I had to choose a spiritual way of life. Even if it meant I was going to have a boring life, I was going to get no sex, I was going to get no money, all these things that I thought I needed. You know? Fuck it, I had sex the other day. And I wasn't planning to, it just happened. Yeah, you see, it took a long time for me to realize that my plan, yeah, wasn't working. And it was going to lead me to the same places, you know, the depth of insanity and pain and incomprehensible demoralization, as the book says, you know, just kept getting worse. Only until I was willing to follow some other plan that so many others followed before me, you know. So, what did I enter into a world that I can't even put into words, you know. Can't explain that enjoyment, you know. It's not hiking, it's not... And sometimes that's where it goes, you know, I end up on a hiking club, I end up here, I end up doing things, I'm drinking coffee with a whole lot of people, I don't know what it is, you know, you can't. Inside, it's always with me, no matter what I'm doing. You know, I'm working now, I've studied, I've done all these things that I was like, yo, how come I can do this stuff, you know, and it doesn't seem like, it's not a big thing, they just add to my life, you know. That's not what makes my life, they just add to it, you know. I always have this purpose, no matter how much money I have, no matter how little money I have, no matter how fit I am, no matter if I'm married or single, no matter if I have children or not, I will always have this purpose that will always allow me to live on this world, you know, at peace, you know, even when it doesn't seem like it's not. I'll always have this duty, you know, and everybody here has that, you know, work the steps, have the spiritual awakening, be guided by this power that you connect to, you know, and then, oh, who knows what the journey is going to be like? Nobody can put it into words. If we could, it would be the worst. As soon as you put something into words for me, then I'm just like, no, I don't like that. You know, but like, yeah, it's like everybody's journey is different, you know. And like helping others, you know, that's the job that I had before I got this job. Before I had a real job, I had that job. That's the best job, you know. Being able to walk into people's houses, you know, and carrying this message. You know, the other day I walked into the boy's house, his mother opened the door, she looked at me like, who's this guy coming in here now? Just one of his drug friends or what is this? You know, like, and then I walked in, I said, hi, ma'am, I'm coming to see your son here. And I sat down, you know, and she just said, yes, sit here in the lounge. She called him, he came to sit in the lounge with us, you know. And I said to him, hey, bro, like, he's been a relapser for long, you know. And I said to him, hey, you know what? Have you ever tried this, you know? Let me tell you what this did for me, you know. I ended up sitting there for hours, you know, hours, I don't know how long, till like the evening, and his mother came in there with a whole pack of Cook Sisters and coffee, and you know, like she was just like, she was listening, she was ironing in the other room there with the door open, you know, like being that, like I couldn't have made that plan, you know, that's not me, you know, I'm guided by this power, you know, that's saving my life, you know, and the people around me, you know, that wasn't part of my plan, you know, so yeah, I'm going to shut up, you know, that the main thing is, to the newcomer, you know, get this book, find somebody who's had the experience that this book was designed to give us, you know, and then work this program, you know, follow their guidance, and carry that message to everybody, man, woman, you've been given this power to carry this message that makes life bearable, way better than bearable, I don't know, how, my English is not so good, but better, the best life you're going to get, you know, like, and it all starts here, you know. You know, you'll enjoy. I can't say what you're going to enjoy, you know. My life is different. I sat in a motorhome the other day carrying the message to a boy, you know, outside the beach watching them, we were laughing, that we laugh all the time. Me and my best friend, JJ, you know, we just do this, you know, and it's okay. That's what I need to do. That's my purpose. Even when everything else is falling apart, it seems like I'm outside the rest of the world. I have this, you know, and I'm okay. You know, and that's here for you too. Thanks.
Morning everyone. So can you hear me? You can see we've all got big books here, we're all keep prepared. My name is Moeng and I'm an alcoholic. For those who are wondering, in the program my name is Moeng S. The S stands for Sepchat. My home meeting is 2.7 steps. And I want to take a moment to pay homage and give thanks to everyone who does service and who attends online meetings through the AA Fellowship. Do you mind raising your hand quick if you attend an online AA meeting? There's a couple of us here. Zoom plays a very important role when it comes to being there for the still suffering alcoholic. So as a Zoom baby, I wanted to say thank everyone who does pay service and does do service on those platforms. My sobriety date is November 24th, 2020. Seapoint Sun said, like I said, it's a Zoom meeting. We meet every Tuesday and Friday. It's a Cape Town meeting, so it's very weird me being based in Pretoria, but my home meeting is a Cape Town meeting. But the fellowship there is amazing. The people there are amazing. I met people here for the first time that I know from Zoom. That's the beauty of this program. The topic, as you can see, is we absolutely insist on enjoying everyday life, on enjoying life. I spent the majority of my 20s progressing from a heavy drinker to a full-blown alcoholic by the age of 35. I had the skilled way of finding a way to hit stationary items driving from Pretoria to Joburg, from Joburg to Pretoria at night. I don't know how I did it. To this day, I've got a phobia for bridges. Because for some odd reason, all my accidents happened around a bridge. When I'm driving now, I see a bridge, my heart just skips a little beat now and again. So thank God I'm alive today. There must be a reason I'm alive today. And Sandisa was talking about roadblocks. It's so weird. I was going to a roadblock the other day, and my heart began racing. And I'm like, but why? My first instinct was to look up and where's my booze? Where I need to hide it. And now I realize that's the old wing, you know. I don't need to be living a life like that. And it was such a relief for me to realize that I don't need to live a life filled with fear. I enjoyed my drink till the point where the obsession ruled and ruined my life. I had no choice but to drink. I know now the insanity is doing the same thing and expecting different results. I realize now that I am the alcoholic who was born to that hot plate. No matter how many times I got burnt, I continue to place my hand on the plate, never learning my lesson, refusing to realize the destruction that alcohol was having in my life. My addiction gave me the illusion that I was enjoying life, when in fact, I was tearing it up into shreds. The truth of my life is depicted in this book. I'm going to read from the book. I'm going to read from chapter, from page 104. It's called To Wives. Just for some context, at the point when the book was written in 1935, the majority of alcoholics at the time were male, so this was written to the families of the alcoholic. And it goes as such. Page 104. So this is from the parent, this is from the family's perspective talking to the alcoholic. We have travelled a rocky road. There is no mistake about that. We have had long rendezvous with hurt pride, frustration, self-pity, misunderstanding and fear. These are not pleasant companions. How many of us can say that we were not pleasant companions when we were in active use? We have been driven to maudlin sympathy. Maudlin means over-emotional and self-pitying. To bitter resentment. Some of us veered from extreme to extreme, ever hoping that one day our loved ones would be themselves once more. I remember my wife crying to me, saying, "Moreng, where is the man that I married?" Our loyalty and the desire that our husbands hold up their heads would be like other men have begotten all sorts of predicaments. We have been unselfish and self-sacrificing. We have told innumerable lies to protect our pride and our husbands' reputations. We have prayed, we have begged, we have been patient. We have struck out viciously, we have run away, we have been hysterical, we have been terror-stricken. We have sought sympathy, we have had retaliatory love affairs with other men. Our homes have been battlegrounds many an evening. How many of us can say that our home was a battleground because of how we used to use? In the morning, we have kissed and made up. Our friends have counseled, chucking them in, and we have done so with finality, only to be back in a little while, hoping, always hoping. Our men have sworn great solemn oaths that they were through drinking forever, How many of us have done that? I'm done with this life. I'm done with drinking. I don't want this any again. I don't want this life. How many of us have done that? Yeah. We have believed them when no one else could or would. Then in days, weeks or months, a fresh harvest. We seldom had friends at our homes, never knowing how or when the men of the house would appear. We could make very few social engagements. We came to live almost alone. When we were invited out, our husbands sneaked so many drinks that they spoiled the occasion. How many of us snuck, breathed around, and headed around the house? Yeah? If, on the other hand, they took nothing, their self-pity made them kill joys. There was never financial security. Positions were always in jeopardy or gone. An armored car have not brought the pay envelopes home. The checking account melted like snow in June. How could men who love their wives and husbands be so unthinking, so callous, so cruel? There could be no love in such persons, we thought. And just as we were convinced of their heartlessness, they would surprise us with fresh resolves and new attentions. For a while, they would be the old sweet selves, only to dash a new structure of affection to pieces one more. Asked why they commenced to drink again, they would reply with some silly excuse or none. It was so baffling, so heartbreaking. Could we have been so mistaken in the men we married? When drinking, they were strangers. Sometimes they were so inaccessible that it seemed as though a great wall had been built around them. How many of us can relate to that? You know? For me, that was my life when I was in active use. But I had this weird obsession that I was enjoying life. Choice was a decision I did not have. Spending enjoyable time with family, the luxury of remembering important events, the ability to leave family occasions with my name and pride intact, were all scenarios that did not occur to me in my life. Embarrassment, shame, disgust, discomfort, and humiliation was how I lived my life. How can we enjoy life like this? Then I found AA. And I was told certain things I could not believe. I was told that I would find a life whereby I would not drink. What? My disease made me rebuke this with so much passion. How can a life without no alcohol be enjoyable? How will I have fun? People won't want to spend time with me. My friends would leave me and I would be alone. That is what my disease told me. My disease filled me with a dis-ease that I thought only alcohol could cure. Then I met my sponsor. Here was the first guy I'd met in my life who was not only sober, but spoke similar experiences that I had gone through. Those experiences that I would not tell a soul, he was sharing in front of a group and laughing about them. That was the first time I understood the bondage that alcohol had over me and the freedom that was possible. Was it really possible to wrestle back choice? Then I got introduced to the 12 steps, the big book, and the fellowship, and my life changed. The book says we are like the passengers of a great liner that moment after rescue from shipwreck and when camaraderie, joyousness, and democracy pervade the vessel from steerage, bottom deck, from the steerage of the bottom deck to the captain's table. And I could so relate to that, you know. I was on a boat, on my way to die. And then somehow the ship got recovered and now got saved. And everyone here is feeling that same way, that joyousness, that excitement, that I found the solution. My disease made me live in a groundhog day, filled with misery, resentment, and anger. And to be rescued from that life was ultimately amazing. Now I know what it means to enjoy life, because I never had the ability to do so in the active days. I do service in all the meetings I attend every week. I sponsor, and I'm actually studying addiction counseling. And I give back and reach out as someone reached out to me. The word enjoy means appreciate, love, adore, delight, experience, take pleasure in, and get pleasure from. All these things I was incapable of doing so. But I needed to work it. I needed to allow the 12 spiritual principles to marinate in my heart continuously. Honesty, hope, faith, courage, integrity, willingness, humility, love, forgiveness, discipline, awareness and service were things I had no conscious of until I was introduced to the program. And the best way to do that is to take someone through the steps yourself. Because that is where I obtained a deeper understanding of them. It's simple. The work does the work. I need to put it to work for it to work. And for me to delight, to find delight, to take pleasure in, and to get pleasure from. In closing, I'd like everyone to close your eyes. Close your eyes. Close your eyes and think of the most enjoyable experience you've had in your life. Your most enjoyable moment. It could be the birth of your child. It could be your wedding day. It could be the day of a great achievement. It could be the day you found love. Who are you looking at on this day? What are the background noises? What scent is in the air? What emotions are you feeling? Is it joy? Delight? Wonder? Happiness? Pleasure? Elation? How does the fabric that you're wearing feel on your skin? If you take that moment and quadruple it, that is what is promised to us in this program. We are promised a fourth dimensional happiness. In step 9 it says, we will experience a new freedom and a new happiness. Now isn't that worth working for? And we have ceased fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity will have returned. We will seldom be interested in liquor. If tempted, we recoil from it from a hot flame. We react sanely and normally, and we will find that this has happened automatically. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. It just comes. That is the miracle of it. We are not fighting, neither are we avoiding temptation. We feel as though we have been placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We have not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. We are neither cocky nor are we afraid. That is our experience. That is how we react, so long as we keep in fit spiritual condition. Thank you for allowing me to be of service.
Hi everybody. My name is Heidi. I'm an alcoholic. And I can never get used to it. My sobriety date is the 12th of January 2018. My sponsor is Anita G and my home group is Valeria. Thanks so much for everybody who organized this. I know there was a lot of organizing that went into this. It's amazing to see so many people. I just want to find out, anybody in their first 30 days here today? Just raise your hand. Okay, welcome. I usually just do that just to try and get myself aside. I'm not going to talk too much about my history, but I came into the rooms of AA in 2014. I was alcoholic from a very young age. I actually saw it when I look now in hindsight. I drank alcoholically from the first time that I drank, which was 13. I never knew it. I always just thought it made me pass out and everybody had fun, so I didn't drink a lot. But I came across a diary and I saw that eventually when I started doing the program much later in my recovery. So by 2014 I had a lot of fun. Before that, I can't say all my drinking days was horrible. But by 2012 I lost a friend to the disease. He took his own life, which was very close to me. Before that I was still drinking, trying to have fun. But that death of my friend was the first time when I picked up liquor, strong liquor, and put it down my throat, and it gave me a sense of relief. And that was amazing. That was exactly what I needed, you know, just to take that pain away for that moment. And we talk a lot about, I remember in the beginning, crossing that invisible line, and that is for me when I crossed that invisible line and it stopped being fun. I couldn't do without it. Every day, just to be normal, just to keep composure, I had to have a drink. That was in 2012. So by 2014, my loving boss put a paper on my table because I was drinking at work. They didn't find me somehow. But he realized, okay, I needed help. And that is how I came across AA. I always thought, okay, maybe I shouldn't go to a meeting, but the meeting was right across my house, right across the street. I would always tell my sponsor, no, I can't go to a meeting, I'm drunk. And she's like, yes, you can. Just walk across the street. You don't have to get into your car. So a lot of people in this room that I know so lovingly were there for me, even though I was in that state in the meeting. And I cried. I cried for so many years. Somebody once told me, stop crying, you're manipulating. The first time I heard that, it's like, yes, it's true. I wanted everybody to feel sorry for me. I was self-pitying. That is how I felt to myself. You know, the whole world was against me. Poor me, poor me. My friend took his life. And the world was against me, the things that I've done. You know, that regret, more remorse and shame that I had. So eventually, I moved jobs to another boss who did fire me. I think I made it about 2 weeks. I had a 5-day bender. And by the Tuesday when I woke up, my mom said, listen, you've been fired. Just go and look in your email box. And I was like, okay. So that was my second rehab that I attended. It was in the R in the middle of nowhere. I was very excited because I exercised the 12 steps. By that time, I was in and out of the rooms for about 2 years already. When I got there, he was an atheist. Very clever man. Knew a lot about the brain and the obsessions, and you know, the big book talks about, you know, how it, we can't quite explain it, but science for me is starting to do that with neural pathways. So I kind of had a bit of an idea of, you know, the physical illness that we had, but not a lot of lot about the spiritual. And for me, that's what this program is, spiritual. It has to come first before the mental and the physical kind of sorts itself out. And I had it the other way around. That rehab, so his solution at the end of the day was to stay in the rehab for about a year, to not mingle with the people that you resented. You were not allowed to, and I had a big resentment towards my mother. When I was young, I got pregnant when I was very young. And my mother gave me an ultimatum. I thought I didn't have a choice. That was my state of mind. And that haunted me later, you know, and it caused me big resentment, not only towards myself, towards my mother. And his solution was, you can't be with the family or the person that triggers you for more than 20, 30 minutes. Then you have to leave. Otherwise, you're going to drink again. But I was in the rooms, thank goodness, and I saw people in the rooms whose families got back together, you know, who loved their families, who got children back, husbands back, wives back, and that is what I saw. I got out of about seven months. I wrote a little very informative letter to my mother, hid it in a pot plant in a glove. And the cavalry came and fetched me after about 7 months. So I didn't stay the year and I didn't work in the art because that was also a solution. Yay. But I came back and I knew that, you know, I had to come back to AA. I didn't want to drink. So I relapsed for another year, about every 3 months. I went back to my previous sponsor. I've had various sponsors before this time. I always thought it was a sponsor. Sponsor wasn't good enough. It was amazing people. They had amazing recovery. But I wasn't ready. I wasn't honest with myself. So a week after my last relapse, another friend of mine also succumbed because of the disease, freak accident. And I was torn by emotions. You know, it's like that emotion lost another person to this disease, somebody who's very close to me. And that's what I thought, it was lost. But I went to meetings, I was still doing 1990s, because every time I relapsed, so I did about 1990s for a year. A lot of fun. And by being honest in the meetings and just talking about it, I finally got to the truth. I wasn't actually, it wasn't that loss, that pain of the loss. I was scared. I was really scared at the time. I was scared that I was going to drink again. Bill talks about it and he says, no words can tell the loneliness and despair I found in the bitter morass of self-pity. Quicksand stretched around me in all directions. I had met my match. I had been overwhelmed. Alcohol was my master. So by that time I had about 3 months of sobriety in between all the relapses. And I started noticing, you know, just that little bit of hope that I had every time. You know, that black hole that my mind went into when I drank. And I knew that if I had to pick up a drink again, I wouldn't be able to put it down. And fear got me sober. I was too scared to go back and I knew I had nowhere to go. I couldn't go back to drinking. I can't block this out. You know, it's going to take my life at the end of the day, just like it did my friend. You know, it's like taking my life was the easiest, softer way at the end of the day because I can't live with myself. And I started getting honest with my sponsor. I think that was the real first rigorous honesty that I had with myself. You know, that I wasn't actually mourning so much the loss of my friend, but I was just fearful. And I did one of the principles, you know, it's like be of service. I was there for the family for the first time, you know, see what I can do for the family, and it changed, and it started to change for me. Today's reflection actually talks about it so much. I must look inside myself to free myself. I must call upon God's power to face the person I feared the most, the true me, the person God created me to be. Unless I can, or until I do, I will always be running and never be truly free. I ask God daily to show me such a freedom. So then by the help of this amazing fellowship, a loving sponsor, and a very loving, caring God, I started doing the work. You know, small things like it works if you work it. I think the first time when I like really put in that self-investigation with myself and the penny started dropping, and it's like I look at my sponsor and it's like, it works if you work it. And I never got it. You know, it's like keep coming back. I just never got it. But for me, that penny, I don't have those pennies. It's like it doesn't matter how many meetings I do. It doesn't matter what my sponsor says. If I don't have God in my life, those pennies don't drop. I have a sponsee. And she was struggling with something, and it's like for the whole week, and I keep on telling her the same thing over and over and over and over, and she's just not getting it. And she comes to me the one day, and she's like, oh, I went to a meeting, and I heard this, and it's like, excuse me? And it's like, I've been telling her this the whole week, but, you know, it's like, what's wrong with this? But that's just how it is, you know, it's like, I can't make that penny drop for her. My sponsor can't make that penny drop for me. I need that connection with a higher power to drop that penny for me when I'm ready to hear that message. And step four is beautiful. It's awful, but it's beautiful. It's like I still do step fours and it feels like I throw up after I've done my step five with my sponsor. But that rigorously, honestly always sets me free, like it talks about in the daily sections. And my honesty at the time was, God had forsaken me. I took the life of another. I had deep resentment and animosity towards my mother, the woman who loved me and who was always there for me, the one person who didn't go to our family. And I was angry at God for not saving Michael. I was angry for Ray. And it was hard, but that was my honesty. It didn't sound as nice at the time it was in my head. I was quite harsh with myself. It wasn't animosity, it was hatred. But that was my truth. And I think the first time I said that to my sponsor, when I could actually be honest with myself, and I also just heard from a friend, and I need to speak my sick mind because my mind gets sick. But I need to say those things, as hard as it is, as ugly as it sounds. It sets me free and it gets me to help me to change my perspective of what, and to heal. Okay, you can just get back on track. Okay. So, in our Just for Today speech, so let me just get this. Just for today, we'll be happy. This assumes to be true what Abraham Lincoln said, that most folks are as happy as they wake up, as they make up their minds to be. That is what this program has given me. You know, it's like, after doing my step four, I realized, as young as I was, I had a choice. I had a choice that time, you know, about what to do. I had support from other people. That was the reality. I chose not. It was good to be a victim. My disease got hold of it and just ran with it. It's much easier to blame everybody else. But I realized it was a hard truth to swallow, but I had a choice. And that gave me freedom. I couldn't blame my mom anymore. And it gave me forgiveness. You know, forgiveness for myself. Forgiveness for my mom. You know, I was scared. She was scared. You know, I would have been an alcoholic. Doesn't matter what happened. My friend, he was in so much pain. You know, because I suffered from that disease and that black hole that I went into. I know that it was the easiest way out for him. You know, I get that now. And I can look with him with love and, you know, it's sympathy. And Ray as well, my friend, you know, my penny dropped when I had a mens to make to him. We weren't together for, we've been separated also because of my disease, which I was very lucky, but somebody came to me in the funeral and told me, I know you guys weren't speaking at the moment, but he told me he loved you so much and he will always love you, and it's like your paths just split. And that for me was my, where I found my peace. You know, somebody else dropping a penny for me. And that is what God does for me. You know, that is, if I choose to seek God out, I can choose to be happy today. I have choices. I can decide where to look at. You know, there's no power. You know, especially with the state of the nation at the moment. It's depressing. You know, but my gratitude list. You know, just find something. I think it's one of the basic lessons that I learned very early in life is gratitude. You know, look for the things. Look for the hope. Look for the beauty. You know, it's just somebody was speaking and saying, you know, I've got that choice. I can decide what I look for. Because if I start looking at the black, there's a lot of it. And my mind can make everything very dark. And that is what I'm grateful for. It's not always easy and I have choices. And that's also, I have a choice. A brick, a hard place, I still have a choice. Okay, so that's it. For the newcomers, it doesn't have to take you, it took me 4 years, it doesn't have to take you 4 years. I know a lot of people, sometimes when I tell newcomers, it's like, how long have you been? It's like, well, since 2014, when did you get started? 2018? And I'm like, it doesn't have to be like that. I know of a lot of people that come in, but for the people who are struggling, just get back up every time. I think that's one of the most important lessons that I've learned, and that's still today. It's like, it doesn't matter, because I fall so many times and I make so many mistakes. Just pick yourself up. Be rigorous, honest with yourself. Find God. And just get up and try again. It doesn't matter what. I just want to close with this. We agnostics. We finally saw that faith in some kind of God was a part of our makeup, just as much as the feeling we have for a friend. Sometimes we had to search fearlessly, but he was there. He was as much a fact as we were. We found the great reality deep down within us. We can only clear the ground a bit if our testimony helps sweep away any prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself. Then, if you wish, you can join us on this broad highway. Thanks for the mission.
Good day, everyone. My name is Law. I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. To be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, one needs a desire to stop drinking. I haven't drank alcohol for the past 37 years. But you know what? The desire to stay stopped is still burning as if it's yesterday, yeah? As if it's yesterday. I found life in Alcoholics Anonymous. Some years back, you know, my wife found Alcoholics Anonymous and she came here. We used to drink together. And she came to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I thought she was bragging by denying me, you know, all the alter actions, the arguments, the fights, and because I will come and want to spark an argument and she will just look at me, you know. And things started to change. Because prior to her coming to Alcoholics Anonymous, myself, my family and her family, we ganged up, we gave her a label, the bad one. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous works. I saw that before coming to Alcoholics Anonymous. In fact, me being 12-stepped, I was 12-stepped by the proof that this thing works. I thought we are enjoying life. I want to share before and after. I thought we were enjoying life then, but our life was, we fight, we swear, we do all sorts of things that normal people don't do. Even when normal people drink, they would do what we were doing then, you know. I was 29 years of age when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous. Yeah. My wife found Alcoholics Anonymous, and within 6-7 months, she was saying to me, "You are aging, you don't want to grow. When are you going to start growing?" It hit home. I think I did my inventory then, although I didn't know it's my inventory. But I sat down and I analyzed every word of what she said. I was aging, I wasn't growing. And I was 29. I was married already. Now, friends, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with a huge ego. Huge ego. For what she said to me, it took time. We were not speaking and life at home was bad, in a sense that there were times when we would communicate by writing a note. I worked in a printing industry, and I would bring a lot of notepads, you know. So I will leave a note, or she will also leave a note, and my response will also be in a note. That was our communication. We had a daughter who was about 6 years. She's about 44 now. She went through hell because of us, you know. To me, it was a normal life, you know, we enjoy life, you know. If you know when you say to the family, give me a break, and they give you a break. Give you a break. My wife gave me a break. But you know, Alcoholics Anonymous, it changed her, and I wanted what I see in her, but we were not speaking, so I couldn't ask her, how are you doing? Just to break the ice, I went to a meeting with her. I want you to imagine, we're not speaking, we're going to the same place. I wanted what I see in her. I didn't know about Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, out there, people like alkis, you know, we will mock at them in the shebeens, you know, we even at each other, you drink like a so-and-so and so, you know, talking about alkis. So I went to a meeting, I loved what I saw there, and it was wonderful. I listened to your stories. You know where I come from? I've never tried to commit suicide, no. I listened to your horrendous and humorous stories, and I thought, if I take your stories to Eshibin, it is a chance, you know? I'll enjoy life. Your stories, I tried that, eh? you know what it happened. But during those times, I endured life, you know? I go through life, and things happen, and I'll say it's part of life. I endured life. I didn't know about enjoying life. No. No. I didn't want to tell my wife that I liked what I saw in your meetings. You know, when I told the buddies out there, I said, she goes to a school where they teach her to stop drinking. And at the school, you know, initially I wanted to see who runs this school. But it was just a meeting. And in a meeting, I found a guy that I worked with, a humorous guy. You know, he was relaying your stories in a humorous way. And I laughed and I said, it's somebody that I drank with him. It's somebody that I schooled with him. You know, if he enjoys it the way he carries on here, I can do the same thing. I came back to these meetings alone. I didn't say to my wife, I'm going there. I went alone. I only told her afterwards that, because you come to a meeting, I introduce myself, but they then referred to me as Ra's husband. I came, kept asking about Ra, not me. And later, you know when you say keep coming back, it works. I kept coming back, but the aim is to take your stories, because my sobriety date, I came here, I attended, I took your stories to the boys, and in that period, I was under pressure, even at work, Because the guys, when I say, I don't drink, said, no man, if you don't have money, tell us, we'll give you something. Tell us, we'll give you something. I had listened to your tradition. I like the one, our leaders about Tassif, they do not govern. They said, nah, now you're being a politician. A drunk politician will be kicked out. But I started, you know, doing what I have seen and learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. So I started gradually doing this. The difficult part was, I was not an alcoholic when I came to your meeting. I was not an alcoholic. I became an alcoholic by listening to your story. You guys kept repeating what is familiar in my life, what I know. You kept repeating it. You know when they say, repetition confirms and strengthens habits, faith becomes natural. I kept coming here and some of your stories I grabbed. And I said, I know this one. This I've done. I know this. This I've done. And the competition of me coming into Alcoholics Anonymous, it was still there. The ego was still there. If I were to say to Za, at least things are changing. We were now speaking. We're speaking about you guys. If I relay a message, then we talk and she will ask. And now there is that connection. We can talk now. But if I were to say things are getting better because of your meeting, then she will be proud and, you know, I didn't want her to feel that way. The thing of I am doing it my way, you know, it was still there, I'm doing it my way. But I want what I saw in these meetings. I had started enjoying life, and you know what, I wanted to insist. Some of the, in the preambles, I don't know in other groups, in our group, there is a portion in our preamble that says, some people will be shocked at our seeming worldliness and levity, but just underneath, there is a deadly earnestness and a full realization that we must put first things first, which is our alcoholism. I enjoy life. I have stopped enduring life, you know. It's wonderful to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. Very, very wonderful. There were places where I said we drank together. Early stages, we will sing, you know, these religious hymns when we drank. It will be lovely, lovely. The aunties in the neighborhood, they loved this company. Your alcohol, somebody mentioned here, alcohol is, you know, capable of removing that joy, that beauty that the aunties were seeing, you know. Alcohol is capable of destroying what is good. The talents that I see in alcohol, the beauty, you know, people in Alcoholics are the most beautiful people. Your alcoholism wanted to destroy them, you know. So what we were then, alcohol removed that. You know, the aunties, we were still young, you know, our friends who were still courting, they used us or me as a barometer. You know, if you threaten your boyfriend to say, if you continue drinking, you'll be like law. And the aunties will tell their kids that if you continue doing what you do, you'll be like law. But Alcoholics Anonymous works, eh? I kept coming here. You know, I've listened to people talking about university, we are here at university, this is university. When you guys changed my life, you took me from that scrap heap straight to the university. University of life. sometimes, you know, people who came with with their degrees and their honors and what, they listen to our story.
Where did you get that?
And I said, from the University of Life, which is Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, in our lives, we are human beings, eh? We are human beings. You taught me something very unique, beyond my wildest dreams. You know, that one-upmanship, I carried that a long way. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous married. I nearly destroyed this marriage because before coming here, we took each other to the marriage counselors or the courts where they do divorces. I went there, I said, we were staying together. I said, she's doing this and that and that, she's gone, and they gave me a letter, go give her, bring her here. Life was that kind, eh? That kind of life. We failed to pretend that, you know, our life was going south. We failed to pretend. It was bad. The FF, the French language. Today things have changed. Today I am happy. You know, sometimes we use proud, pride, and pride is a God-given instinct. I am proud that I am sober. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, the first few days, I stopped drinking. In my mind, by listening to you. Because, you know, when you share your stories, we listen and we want what you have. So I wanted what you have. For me to start building what you have, I needed a dry foundation. I stopped drinking. I had to start the beginning. Stopping to drink is just for the beginning. There's more behind stopping. When I stopped, I didn't know what sobriety is. But I kept doing what you guys say after every meeting. Keep coming back, it works. I kept coming back. I came to understand that there is sobriety after stopping to drink. And in sobriety, in one of the chapters it says the best days of our lives lie ahead. As long as I keep coming into Alcoholics Anonymous. As I keep coming to test from your wisdom. You guys are wonderful people. When we say we insist of enjoy, you know, life, to me, my sobriety becomes my life. And for me to protect my sobriety, I protect my sobriety with almost everything that I can use to protect it. Because my sobriety is my life. If I lose this sobriety, I lose my life. Not you, out there, the normal people will say this thing, it thought it would never come back. You know, the Shibins, some of them are still holding my, I'm talking about 37 years, some are still holding my chair. I don't know for how long. But now, I'm enjoying life here. For me to go back there, it will never work. It will never work. Alcoholics Anonymous, for me, it has built my family. I used your steps, your traditions, you know, things that we think is just for an individual to, they've been talking about sponsors. I'm trying to avoid using sponsor. But if I don't use your steps and your traditions, I won't be able to make a family constitution, because those are used as a constitution to give my family life, and we enjoy, you know. Now we're grown-ups and we have grandkids, we have, you know. when my grandchild, they stopped the bottle, you know, the sucking bottle. The little one was so morose, eh? And you guys say I must talk about we're not a glam lot. I looked at my grandchild and I said, do you think I'm like that? No, I'm in sobriety. I enjoy life. Eh? I'm not a glam lot. Eh? Thank you very much. Thanks for that.
Thank you so very, very much to all our speakers in this meeting. Honest, truthful, funny, heartfelt. It really was wonderful. We laughed a lot. Some research I've done and suggests some Greek philosophers said laughter. You know, we laugh at previous versions of ourselves when we were more ignorant, less wise, more naive, perhaps. And then if we were to move to an explanation of joy, I think it determines why alcoholics have the capacity to laugh at our past. Joy is an acceptance of that previous version of self, and then it becomes an emotional response. And then finally, happiness becomes quite difficult to define, seeing as it is a state of being. It's a plane of existence that goes beyond mere frivolous laughter and often unwanted or unexpected response or joy, which is an acceptance, but it is a manner of living, so to speak. And the one thing that, you know, and this sentence, we absolutely insist on enjoying life. It's one of those, don't we all just love these beautiful, wonderful, mind-numbing contradictions this program sometimes gives us? Always to our benefit, but I certainly learned in my time in the program that it's not about what I want, it's about what I need. And here we say we insist on enjoying life, and listening to you all, I realize we are allowed to want joy in our lives. We are allowed to want happiness because it is given to us. Thanks to the fact that all our speakers today had big books with them, which reminded me we have a recipe for happiness. And it's found in those simple, simple steps. You know, it is trust God, clean the house, and work with others. And thank you so very much for reminding us all of that today as well. And therefore it is also a great honor and privilege for me to please provide you with one of these wonderful benefits. I'm going to ask our MC if she's got any announcements, after which if we could please just hang around for the Serenity Prayer. Tandisa.
Hi, Tandisa. I'm an alcoholic, recovering alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Quick announcement. We're going to break for lunch from 12:30 to 2 o'clock. And then we've got the next meeting coming up. But I just wanted to say awesome, awesome thank you to the panel. When I was listening to this meeting, there was just one thing that struck me. Someone shared about having sex and they hadn't planned it. And I was like, God, don't be playing those games with me. That is a man's game, God. You don't want to throw the dice with a woman, but... Yeah. But the gifts of recovery are absolutely amazing. And, there's some inspiration for the newcomers. They're like, yeah. Because all they've been hearing is one year. Work a program and you'll get laid. Yeah. That's all I heard. So we just hear wrong, our ears are just wrong. But I can relate so much to the delusion of thinking drinking was fun. But, and also something that I had to share for the old timers here, right? When I first came into the fellowship, and the old timers, you know, the old timers, they had recovery, they worked a program, they were wisdomers. And then the one time I went to, I think it was an area meeting or a, I don't know the word, after area, and I saw old timers fighting. I was like, no! Was old timers behaving like alcoholics? It's awesome, you got a good service, just to see old timers behaving like alcoholics. And there's something that I related to, like enduring life. I'm done. That is one thing I've done my time. If I think of all those years being a slave to alcoholism, and I can relate to catching alcoholism, being a slave to alcoholism, I'm done. I'm done being miserable, I'm done being tired, I'm done being all of this. And thank God for everyone who walked in here, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, was shown a simple way to tap into a power that allows me to live free, to be able to deal with life and to be free. Because this is just the second fuck it. Because fuck it, whew, it was long and it was hard and it's definitely not worth it. So, and a special thank you. You know, I was listening to the people sharing, and it just hit me. How many people, the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, the Fellowship of the Spirit, who made sure I stayed here. The people who came to me, you know, who came to me, there was this guy, be like, dude, you want to go through the big book? Oh God, I forget. I didn't come here for that. But this guy kept coming, and he approached me like the big book says, we approach the newcomer. You know, I've heard different things. It's like the newcomer must ask for help. A big book said, fellowship, we approach the newcomer. And this guy approached me. And when I eventually drank again, because like the meetings are not enough to treat my alcoholism. They give me temporary relief. But I need this shit treated. I need this and this treated. And I eventually drank again. I went to that guy and I was like, I need help. And he looked at me and he said, do you have a big book? I said, yes. Said we'll start tomorrow, and my life changed from doing the steps. So to the newcomers, if you're sitting there and you're miserable and you're sitting in meetings and you are dying inside, you know what, find someone who's done the work. We will show you the way. There's a lot of love, there's a lot of oh, hello. So can we give a special round of applause to the people who came before us, who approached us, who showed us the way, so that you can carry the next message. Now we're going to hand over to Hannes to close the meeting for us. Be back here at 2 o'clock. And wait, don't eat too much. The last time, yesterday, people ate too much. And then when they came back, they had the sleepies. So just half a portion, you can eat it afterwards when you go home.
If we may please stand and hold hands for the serenity prayer. Our prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Keep coming back. It works. If you work it, so work it. You're worth it.